Mike with Hunting Ain't Easy. And just have a kind of a monologue. I've got a handful of things I want to touch on. There's things that come up about hunting advocacy, hunting rights, anti-hunters, legislative attacks, ballot box biology attacks on hunting. And I have these amazingly brilliant ideas throughout the week. And then I don't do anything with them. Or I have conversations with other stakeholders, like Charles over at Howl for Wildlife. And we have these great conversations and I don't capture it. And so I'm just going to spend a few minutes here. This shouldn't be a long podcast, but I think there's a couple important, like, just kind of bullet point ideas that I want to share with you, because I know you're involved and you're active and engaged in the issues. So I want to share with you some of the kind of the mental mindset or the mental framework that I've got on addressing some of these issues. We've got some big issues ahead of us in the next year. Right in the heart of the country in Colorado, there's a ballot box initiative that's being developed. It's not an actual initiative yet. It's still in the development stages. That is going to dramatically, it's going to propose to either eliminate or dramatically limit mountain lion and bobcat hunting in Colorado. And it appears that they're going to use language such as, like, you know, eliminate the trophy hunting of mountain lions and bobcats. And so, you know, language is really important. Personally, for me, I think trophy hunting in its true and pure form, as we know it, as part of the conservation, you know, mechanisms, trophy hunting's fantastic. It's actually just selective hunting. It's being selective when you're out on the landscapes looking for a critter. You are choosing to pursue typically the oldest, largest, and possibly the least productive animals on the landscape. You're going after old males typically that are resource heavy on resource consumption, and they're past their prime in terms of reproduction. So, you know, selective hunting is good. Selective hunting and intentional selective hunting is good for the wildlife populations that we go after. And it's really why a framework was built to kind of incentivize and reward and you know, call a success to when somebody takes a larger male critter out of the population. Anyways, in Colorado, an initiative is being developed. It's going to be a ballot box initiative, which means it's going to go to a popular vote. And popular votes can go a lot of different directions. And they really rely on people that otherwise usually don't think twice about the issue to make a snap, very quick judgment when they're in the ballot box, when they're filling out that ballot. They're going to make a quick judgment on yay or nay. And so the headline or the title of the ballot initiative is important, because that's going to sway people's thoughts. And then also people's understandings of that topic when they come into the ballot to fill it out is very important as well. And if we as a community leave the arena of public perception empty, like we don't go into that arena of public perception, then we are basically handing over, you know, 80 to 90% of the population base to the anti-hunting rhetoric and propaganda machine to inform those folks of what and how to think, and what words mean, and what it is that we do, and why hunting is, you know, they'll ignore, you know, how and why hunting is so important as an actual sustainable mechanism to conservation. So if we don't go into that arena and deal with public perception proactively, we lose. And so this is a ballot box initiative, but it really spurs, and it's a huge opportunity for us as a hunter and angler and conservationist and really wildlife advocate nation. It gives us an opportunity to work on the Colorado problem and threat, but also work within our own communities, whatever state, whatever community we're in, to basically start making headway on informing and shaping perspectives and opinions in the non-hunter's mind close to us. Because the number one thing we can do as a group of hunter and wildlife and conservation advocates is to develop, you know, 80 out of 100 of our colleagues, friends, family members, neighbors, coworkers, etc., to be supportive of hunting as a mechanism for conservation. Winning the minds of the non-hunter is how conservation and hunting rights are supported. And so it's important for us to be thoughtful, not fearful. We don't want to be fearful. We shouldn't be fearful. We need to be thoughtful and proactive in how we share our stories. But most importantly, we need to share our stories. We need to share the visual and also the narrative stories of hunting. That would include grip and grins done, you know, we'll say, quote, tastefully. But it also includes, you know, the hike in, the hike out, using that harvest, using the meat from that game animal that you take. If you're hunting predators, talking about why predator management has a purpose. A lot of folks don't understand predator hunting. They think it's just to go out and like kill something and feel superior. But predator hunting has purpose. And that's one of the most important, you know, tenets of the North American conservation model that often gets ignored because so many people focus on, well, we're going to eat it. Or we're saving, we're going to eat it. Like if you're eating the meat from that harvest, from that kill, then you get resoundingly strong support throughout all the various communities out there. And why shouldn't we? It's game meat is healthy. It's good for us physically. The animal lived its best life. And compared to a, you know, factory farmed animal, it's a beautiful thing. But the other part that often is overlooked is that does taking this animal's life serve a purpose? And to that degree, that part of the North American conservation model doesn't get enough play. And it's important for us to communicate the purpose of the hunt as much as it is just, you know, around the meat aspect of it. And so, yeah, predator hunting has purpose. Humans have participated in the management of wildlife on the landscape since the beginning of time. Humans have had great reverence for predator species, but also hunted them since the beginning of time. And I would say that most of us in the hunting community fall into that category. I think that if you are in the camp of wiping out any specific species in North America, such as wolves or grizzly bears, you're probably doing yourself and the community a disservice. Because again, we need to go back to that arena of non-hunters where decisions will be made. I would say that most of us as wildlife advocates and participants in what goes on the landscape, when we go out into the woods, we go into the mountains, we go into the wilderness. I think it's fascinating to see animals all the time, like whatever they are. Like to me, if I see a coyote, it's like, oh, like to me, seeing a wild animal is a special moment. And I know coyotes are, you know, there's I probably see more coyotes in my suburban neighborhood than I do out in the mountains. But the point is this: when we go into that arena with the non-hunters, we need 80% of them to be on our side. If we're talking about, shoot, shovel, shut up, and kill them all, smoke a pack a day, et cetera, we lose that 80% of the audience as a potential supporter and mechanism. So my view, and I think a lot of folks are in this camp now, is that I don't want to see animals poisoned. I don't want to see animals like shot from helicopters, and that would include mule deer on Catalina Island. That would include elk in Montana. Both two crazy anti-wildlife proposals that I have a hard time believing are even in discussion, but also don't want to see, wolves or any other predator killed, en masse without at least a degree of quote fair chase applied to it. And more important than that, I don't want to see any wildlife populations targeted to such a degree that we're going to wipe them out. I think that hunting is intrinsically human, and it goes back again to the beginning of time that we've shared the landscape, and we have hunted and participated in the management of population control and harvest, so purpose and harvest for consumption since the beginning of time. We've also participated in non-consumptive enjoyment of wildlife since the beginning of time. When we're out scouting for an upcoming hunt, or if we're just out exploring the landscape and the wilderness and the habitat, and we see an animal that's interesting, we are at that point a non-consumptive user, and I think that's great. The anti-hunters will not portray any of these things as what we are and what we believe in. So I think it's important that we acknowledge that we do enjoy non-consumptive use of the animals. We enjoy a diverse and robust population. I'll say this, a robust population of diverse species on the landscape. And I think it's important to convey that we love these animals being out there enough to where we put dollars and time forward to support the habitat that makes their success possible. So keep in mind the value and importance of winning the mind, going into the arena of public opinion and winning the minds of the non-hunting public is absolutely critical to another 100 years of support for conservation, support for hunting rights, support for hunting as a mechanism, as the number one mechanism that is sustainable to support wildlife and habitat in North America and really even globally. So, always keep that in mind. It's not. We shouldn't be hiding in the shadows. I absolutely disagree when anybody says we shouldn't be putting our stories out into the public sphere. We shouldn't be using social media to share our stories. I think that is absolutely the wrong message, and I disagree with the handful of proponents that tell us that. Because I'll tell you right now, when the bear debate came up in California, and there's been two anti-bear hunting proposals floated in California in the last few years. One was legislation, and thankfully we got that slapped back quickly. Like, we had a very fast and hard response to that legislation, and I think it surprised the senator that had brought it forward how fast and just complete California hunters and anglers responded to that. That failed. And then we had a bear anti-bear hunting petition was submitted to the commission here, Fish and Game Commission. And that was about an 8-9 month slog of outreach communication. But hunters showed up. Hunters showed up through email and written communication, largely driven by and through the Howl for Wildlife advocacy portal, which I encourage you all to join Howl for Wildlife. Go online, howl.org or howlforwildlife.org. And that is the best portal you can use to communicate with decision makers. But something became clear for me when that petition was put in front of the California Fish and Game Commission about bear hunting, because the anti-hunters kept using the concept that we kill these animals just to take pictures and just to take, you know, just for the Instagram or just for the likes or whatever. And it's such bullshit. Because there's a lot of work that goes into a successful hunt. And personally for me, and I know a lot of you out there, you're sharing the stories of what you're doing, whether you're successful or not. Like the journey and the path to get to that success of a successful hunt is tremendous work and tremendously rewarding the entire way along. So they paint this picture that we're just doing it for the likes and just doing it for the pictures and the Instagram and whatnot. And it clicked with me that, like, intellectually, that doesn't make any sense, because these are people that say this. They have social media. They put pictures of their spouse up online. They put pictures of their food online. They put pictures of their dog online. It's like, you've got a picture of your wife on your Facebook page. Is that now a trophy wife? Is that now, like, is your child somehow less meaningful because you have shared a story about their success in school and put a picture of your child up on Facebook or Instagram, sharing a story about a family member? You know, humans tell stories. And so whenever somebody says that we shouldn't be sharing these stories, they're trying to push you back into the closet. They're trying to push you into the closet, have you lock the door and hide out so that people don't see you and know your story. And that is absolutely the wrong thing to do. So we do need to share our stories. Obviously, the better we are at storytelling and the better we are at knowing our audience and what we want from that audience, the better we're going to do. And so if our audience is hunters, non-hunters, wildlife advocates, people that enjoy diverse species on the landscape, people that want to support habitat, we can tell a more complete story and put it all out there and have all of those stakeholders understand what hunting is to us and what hunting really is to conservation. So don't let other hunters tell you to hide your stories because there's fear of, you know, somebody might get upset. Just do a good job with your stories and set your stories up so you're going to win the mind and heart of the non-hunters that are in that arena, because they're going to make the decisions about how this goes in the next year to decade. Another theme that comes to mind is that you'll read in the press, you'll read in the media, and you'll even hear people in the hunting and conservation community refer to the anti-hunting groups as animal rights extremists. I take issue with that. They are not animal rights extremists. They are simply anti-hunting extremists. And when we, that means you and me and the hunting media, the hunting, you know, the companies that support hunting and conservation, wildlife biologists, anybody in the hunting and conservation and wildlife management space needs to no longer ever call them animal rights extremists. Because they're not out there for animal rights. You can't focus on a single predator and wrap up an entire basket of laws and regulations that protects a single predator that is not in danger, that is robustly thriving on the landscape, and protect that single species while degrading human rights and say that that's an animal rights issue. It's not. It's an anti-human, anti-hunting organization. And that is an extreme organization because they want to go to extreme measures to break the foundation of conservation, to go against principles and mechanisms that have been successful over the last 100 years to bring numerous species back from extinction. So don't call them animal rights organizations and correct somebody when they do. They are not animal rights organizations. They're anti-hunting organizations. They're using anti-hunting propaganda. They're using slanderous, deceptive stories and lies about how hunting works and what hunting does and what hunters are all about. And so don't let them hide under this title of animal rights extremists. Because a lot of people will hear, oh, well, they're animal rights extremists. I'm here for animal rights. Bullshit. They're not about animal rights. They're about taking away human rights. They're about taking away proven principles and mechanisms for conservation that have worked. And they have a single issue. They don't seek biodiversity. They don't seek numerous species being successful in the landscape. They want to attack hunters and hunting rights and human rights and the right to go out and participate in the landscape and manage wildlife populations as we have since the beginning of time. So we need to no longer acknowledge or even acquiesce and support the idea that they are animal rights organizations. They're anti-hunters, and they are taking extreme measures to break down proven systems. It's as simple as that. All right, third and last concept for today. School is in session, right? So, anyways, one of the debates that comes up a lot when we hear about the North American conservation model and conservation funding and conservation decision making and whatnot is the idea of consumptive use and non-consumptive use. And I think there's an idea that somehow the non-consumptive user. So consumptive use is simple. I'm going to go out. I'm going to hunt. I'm going to consume what I kill. Going to go fishing. Bring the fish home. Cook it up. It's consumptive use. Deer hunting, waterfowl, bear hunting is a consumptive use. Anything where you're taking the animal off the landscape and using it is consumptive use. I'll just interject, you know, market hunting was probably what brought many of our wildlife populations to the brink of extinction. Hunting unregulated, you know, in North America and in Africa, probably in Europe as well, anywhere that going out, taking wildlife off the landscape for consumption and to be sold in the marketplace, you know, go out, kill 10 deer, kill 10 bears, bring them down into town, sell the meat, sell the hides, etc. Market hunting, which was not regulated, is what brought so many wildlife species to the brink of extinction. Consumptive use today is different. Consumptive use today is you go out and you hunt for yourself and you consume what you kill, eat what you kill. You're a hunter, you go out and eat what you kill. That regulated framework is sustainable. It's sustainable economically. It's sustainable in terms of the wildlife species that are being hunted and harvested. And so consumptive use is what most of us do as hunters. But non-consumptive use is going out and taking pictures. I'm going to go hiking with my family. We're going to go out and we see a bald eagle. We're going to take a picture of it. That's non-consumptive use of that bald eagle. We go out and see deer. It's non-consumptive use. I think the non-consumptive use idea has been stretched to where, you know, the person that lives in the basement in the urban center and looks at pretty pictures of wildlife 1,000 miles away and then makes their vote based on never leaving their house or their basement. I guess that's consumptive use as well. I tend to disagree. I think we should draw the line. Like, you either participate by going to where it is or you're not. But, you know, everybody's got a different idea of what non-consumptive is too. But here's the deal. There's this idea that consumptive use and non-consumptive use have different goals and objectives. That wildlife management, when you're focused on consumptive use, is going to be different than wildlife management when you're focused on non-consumptive use. And we've allowed that to sit and kind of lock in as though the consumptive user has a different set of goals than the non-consumptive user. And I would say that's actually complete. That's flawed. It's completely flawed. As a consumptive user, as a hunter, I want to go out into the woods. I want to go out into the mountains here in California. I've got the Sierra Nevada, you know, an hour to 2 hours away. I could be up at, you know, mountain peaks, high alpine meadows. I can get into some seriously amazing landscape. I can get out onto rivers that used to be teeming with salmon and steelhead. I can get out in the ocean and hunt, do deep sea fishing. You know, I've got so many opportunities for consumptive use close by. But as a consumptive user and a hunter or angler, I want large quantities of those critters on the landscape. That's what I want. That's what I want it to be managed for. If I'm a non-consumptive user, say I'm a photographer, I want the same thing. I want a lot of wildlife on the landscape. Who pays into the system to improve the habitat, to regulate the take, to do the data studies on the population, to do the surveys of how many of that critter are on the landscape, what the makeup of that population is? Is it trending to older animals or younger animals? Is it growing or contracting? Who's paying into that? The consumptive users are paying the most into that. And that's fine, and that's not really the debate here. My point is that if I'm a non-consumptive user, nothing is stopping me from going out and putting in the same effort that a hunter is putting in. In fact, a consumptive user can go out, or a non-consumptive user, you know, the photographer can go out typically 365 days a year with no license, no fees, no permits, no tags, and enjoy the wildlife. And they can put in whatever effort they want. They can backpack in. They can pay for an outfitter to drop camp them into the wilderness and spend 10 days out there with their camera, and enjoy the landscape and the wildlife the same as the hunter, which is the consumptive user. So I think the flaw that comes up is that there's this idea that if we stopped catering to the hunter who's consuming the wildlife, that more critters would be on the landscape. And generally, when you look at how the number of animals that hunters are taking, that's just not the case. That, you know, we take such a small percentage of animals off the landscape. In California, more animals are killed by car, you know, vehicle to animal collision than are killed by hunters. And so the consumptive use of the hunter is negligible and sustainable and paying in to support habitat and whatnot. And so we shouldn't allow, I don't think we should support the idea that there's friction and there's a gap between the consumptive user and the non-consumptive user. The non-consumptive user is invited to go participate in the landscape and the habitat and the wildlife every day of the year, typically, without restriction. And their goal of seeing animals, their goal of knowing that those animals are thriving, is the same as the goal of the typical hunter. Nobody, well, there's a few, but typically, you know, if you want to get into policy and where the hearts and minds of most hunters are, there's very little drive to eradicate any wildlife from North America at this point. What there is a need to manage wildlife. There's a need to balance wildlife. There's a need to regulate. There's a need to be involved in the overall biodiversity and success of multiple species populations. You know, the anti-hunters don't really acknowledge this, but in California, you could put a mountain lion tag into the pocket. You could put a mountain lion and a bear tag into the pocket of every single deer hunter. And you would not significantly dent the population of either of those species. I mean, we see it already. There's 40,000 bear tags sold in California. You know, 30 to 40,000 bear tags sold in California, and we barely take 1,000 bears a year. And even when we were hound hunting in California, the bear population was thriving and growing year over year over year. So because we're no longer in the age of poisoning wildlife, and I think that's good, we don't want to be, because we're no longer in the era of killing wildlife en masse from, you know, airplanes and helicopters, and I think that's good that we don't do that. We're coming into an era where fair chase hunting and trapping of any of these populations is going to be, it's almost inherently sustainable. We need the data, it needs to be regulated, it needs to be managed, it needs to be paid in, which is fine. But the non-consumptive user is welcome to go out in the landscape and find as many deer as they want and take pictures. And so there isn't really a competing interest there, in my view. And we shouldn't allow, I don't think we should, I think we should challenge it when somebody says, yeah, but what about the photographer? What about the people that just want to go out and take pictures? It's like, well, go. Like, saddle up, you know, throw on your backpack, hike into the backcountry, hike into 9,000 feet in the Sierra Nevada in August, and take as many pictures of deer as you want. And they'll say, well, gosh, it's hard to find them. It's like, yeah, you're damn right it's hard to find them. They are there. It doesn't matter. Like, you could have four times as many deer, they'd still be hard to find. Because that's just the way deer behave in August, right? September. And so if the non-consumptive user wants a petting zoo, then they need to go to their national park, go to Yellowstone, go to a sanctuary, something like that. The reality is they think that somehow there's going to be a lot more animals on the landscape if there isn't hunting. And I would say that that's actually incorrect, that it is the hunting and the mechanism of sustainable, regulated, paid-for hunting opportunity that helps these animals thrive and bounce back and remain in balance on the landscape. So don't let the non-consumptive argument get in the way of protecting hunting rights. They're welcome to go out and find as many animals as they want and take pictures of them. That's fine. So, anyways, that's my statement on that one. I think that's all I got. Hopefully I planted some seeds for thought, and I think it's important how we use our language. I think it's important that our language and our storytelling acknowledges, you know, as much of the end-to-end journey that we have here. And the values and benefits that hunting provides us as individuals, us as families, us as humans. It's good to get outside and breathe fresh air and do hard things as humans, as well as how hunting benefits wildlife populations. We have a historical record over the last 100, 120 years of using conservation and hunting as a mechanism to bring species back from the brink of extinction and supporting you know, wildlife and biological diversity and success on a grand scale. It's important to share that fact with folks in your community so that they understand a little bit more about what it is that hunting does for wildlife and for conservation. Please go to howlforwildlife.org. You can also go to howl.org. It takes you to the same place. Go to Howl for Wildlife. Become a member. It's a couple different member levels. It's effectively free. You also have some very cool discount opportunities or membership opportunities that get you some discounts with some very good vendors and participants in the industry. So go to Howl for Wildlife and follow along there. Please get involved and follow the Colorado ballot initiative process. It's not an actual initiative yet. It's due to be one sometime in 2024. And it is going to be a nationwide throwdown to fundraise, because it's going to cost money to win this battle. It's going to take professional and expert political strategy and advertising, but it's also going to take a substantial grassroots effort. And even if you're not in Colorado, the grassroots effort can sway mindset, and it can sway whether people are funding the support of hunting or the attack on hunting. And so no matter what state you're in, no matter what species you go after, no matter what your level of activity is as a hunter or an observer of wildlife, know that you need to be involved in the support of hunting and conservation in Colorado this summer. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode. You can find me on Instagram at Hunting Ain't Easy. And feel free to shoot me some comments or feedback if you got some ideas. If you don't like my ideas, or if you just want to say, give me an attaboy on what we've got going on here. So looking forward to some feedback. And thanks for following on. Thanks for listening. Hunting ain't easy.